Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
What's up, y'all? It is the 3 o'clock hour. I'm Maggie Dawn, and it is therefore time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Today on Maggie and the Millionaires, we're joined by a guest with a very famous last name, Abigail Disney. And yes, I mean that Disney. Abigail is the granddaughter of Roy Disney, the grandniece of Walt Disney, and she is, in her own right, an Emmy-winning documentary filmmaker and co-founder of Fork Films, a nonfiction media production company. She's a philanthropist, social activist, and we love this, of course, a member of the Patriotic Millionaires herself. She's here today to talk with us about a film she produced and directed called The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales, an examination of inequality in America through the lens of her family's company. Abby, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate your time. Tell us more about The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales.
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. And I've been aware that it's not always the greatest company in terms of the way it's managed, even if it's done things that people in this country really love and cherish in a lot of ways. But I got reached out to in 2018 by a group of the Disney workers, the folks that do all the amazing stuff at the theme parks. And they were getting minimum wage in 2018, which was at the time $11 an hour in Orange County, one of the most expensive counties in the country. And they were finally, all of the unions had gotten together after years and years and years of being divided and conquered. And they did a study of their workers and found that 73% of workers at Disney could not cover their basic costs every day, even though when they were working full time. And this study revealed lots of other appalling things, including homelessness and all that. So I had a Facebook message one day, and normally I don't look at Facebook messages, but this one really captured my imagination because I grew up with those folks. You know, my grandfather would take me and I'd hold his hand, and you know, it was some of the best memories of my life. But he used to say to us, like, those people work really hard. You better respect those people. And so when somebody reaches out to you after like that kind of memory from your childhood and says, I literally cannot feed my children working full time at this company, is there anything you can do to help us? And so I went out and met with them and got pretty pissed off when I heard what they had to say, and ended up making a film about it because that was the best way I knew to not only address the issue short term at that company, but sort of talk about how we got to this place, because Disney's actually typical of American companies. And it's been a long journey from where they were in the 1950s and 60s to where we are today. It's a very, very conscious journey on part of Wall Street and Republican politicians. And I wanted to kind of lay that out there using Disney, which is just the quintessential American company.
There's so many things that I think are laudable. And one is the acknowledgement and the idea that I'm going to do something about this problem using your super skills, right? You're a filmmaker, that's your medium. So mad respect, Abby, for that, first of all. And especially because you're talking about you and your family, which is incredibly personal. What was that a hard decision? Like, how did you, was it just obvious, of course, I'm going to use Disney to explore this issue? Did you have resistance? How did you balance all of those ideas and conflicts and loyalties in your head?
I did inherit some genes. And one of them was a marketing gene. And I'm not immune to thinking strategically about the use of my name to make sure a film gets seen. So, you know, I call it whoring out my name, you know, gotta do it sometimes. And it does help me get more attention. And so I'm happy to use it when it feels possible to do so. But beyond that, you know, the thing is, like, every privilege I have is on the backs of these human beings, you know, and it's personal. It's very personal. Yeah, it was personal for me to talk about my family, but it's even more personal for them to have kids they can't feed, you know, to have cars they can't gas up, to have diabetes they can't treat. So For me to think it's not personal is absurd and privileged and entitled in a way I don't want to be.
Bravo for that. that takes some deep self-awareness. Frankly, I don't see in a lot of candidates
not a common thing.
No, from most GOP candidates. I wanted to ask you, when you look at Disney and through this film, do you think the changes that have happened, mm-hmm. which largely is the degrading of a livable wage, right? Yeah. And trying to increase profit margins, not by managing costs in different ways, but by paying people less. Do you think it's representative of how corporations have, frankly, devolved? I'm not going to say evolved, mm-hmm. devolved in America since the 50s.
When I went out to meet with them, what I saw was everything about corporate America for the last 50 years, Disney did, right? Mm. So they had people on salaries who had healthcare and pensions, and the salaries were sufficient that they could raise families. They could have a house, they could have a car, they could send their kids to school. At the time, we were spending enough money that their car wouldn't wear out or break down too quickly on the roads, that the schools were decent, that you could go to college without impoverishing your family, or you could get healthcare without impoverishing your family. So first of all, the Republican project was to demean and diminish all of those things. And then the company did what companies everywhere have done, where they laid off the salary workers. So it used to be that they would encourage you to come at 18 or whatever and pour the sodas, do the ticket taking and whatever, and then you'd work your way up. And for a long time, the guy who ran Disneyland was someone who had come in as a soda person, you know, as an 18-year-old. So there was this dream. And, you know, yes, I call it the American dream. And it was just turned on its head. The idea of someone working their way up from the inside is now a sort of ridiculous thing. And the hourly workers who replaced all those salaried workers are treated like endlessly replaceable cogs. They're not treated like human beings, and they're certainly not looked at as assets, you know, that help the company. But the biggest violation to me about this is it's not that they were paying people less, but they were also, by the way, while they were paying them less, they were also pushing on productivity. Yes. So for less and less money, you had to do more and more in an hour. But also, they moved so much capital to shareholders, you know, billions and billions and billions of cash every single year got sort of pushed up the capital stream into the hands of stockholders, 80% of whom are the richest 10% of society. So this was a massive shift of capital and wealth from people who did not have wealth to people who already had wealth. It's a violation of everything, I believe.
And frankly, the social contract between, capitalism as concept, as an economic operation, and the workers that are essential to make that work, right? It's just, it's shocking in its callousness.
Yeah.
And certainly we've talked about this very, and you so ably and clearly described it, Abby, it is trickle up wealth, right? Like that is what's going on. There is no wealth trickling down. But the mythology here in part, which I think you're getting at, right, is that underpaying workers, that depressing wages, paying people the very least you can pay them, is an essential requirement for corporations like Disney to be successful. Is this true? Would Disney still be successful if it was paying people a living wage?
Yeah, well, there was an ideology, right, that kind of took hold of the business world, and it kind of overlapped a lot with ideologies that were being pushed in the world of politics as well. And one of the ideologies was, you know, your job as a wealthy person is to get as much as you can. And if you're a wealthy company, you make as much as you can. You just do. That's what you do. There's no limit to what you can do to accomplish that. So a lot of I know this sounds like a weak word in this context, but decency fell by the wayside. And so more and more, if you are looking to be taken seriously as any CEO in America is by Wall Street, you wouldn't be such a chump as to pay more than you absolutely had to. And when I first started talking about this, business people that I knew and people in my world said, well, but that's just the going rate, Abby. That's just what people pay. And I'm like, well, is it? Because it may be what people are paying, but it's not what people have to be paying. Like that beautiful open marketplace that you keep talking about, that unfettered marketplace, is actually supposed to be working the opposite way than what is happening right now. If it were truly about the market, you know, people would go elsewhere and other people would offer them more money. And that's not happening in this marketplace.
Well, I think you've put your finger on something that I think is really essential here. And that is the why of that. And the metrics by which we adjudged corporate success evolved with what I'm going to call the financialization of corporate management, the Wall Streetization. Right? Like, why are people ticked about 2008? Because not a single one of them spent a day in jail. They're doing the same things to our corporations by metricing things that, frankly, unbundle the interest of the worker with the interest of the corporation, at least in theory. Now, of course, that breaks down in practical application. Folks, my very special guest this half hour before I get carried away even more is Abigail Disney. She's an Emmy-winning documentary filmmaker. Yeah, she's of that Disney family. And she's the co-founder of Fork Films, a nonfiction media production company. And she's just produced and directed a movie called The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales. Abby, Disney employees have been trying to unionize. How has that been going? What's the impact?
Well, at Disneyland in Anaheim always had unions because at the time it opened in the mid-1950s, you had to have unions. It just wasn't possible not to. So much as my grandmother, grandfather, and great uncle would have preferred not to have unions there, they had to bring them in. So they've always been there, but you know, because of law changes and rule changes and attitude shifts in the 80s and 90s, the unions lost so much of their power and their capacity. And the company very consciously divided them off from each other and kind of forced them into these really weak positions. And of course, there was that massive abandonment of unions by workers because of a public education campaign from Republicans. So yeah, they're having a hard time, you know, having the power that they really should have to make the demands that they need to make.
We're going to come back with more with Abigail Disney, yep, that Disney, on today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.